Welcome to World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C., and here we have another one of our weekly programs. Today, I'm recording this on 8-8-08. It's Friday, as I'm speaking to you, Friday, the 8th of August, 2008. Now, this was a day when attention had been focused on the possibility of some kind of an Anglo-American intelligence provocation unleashed in the context of the opening ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics, the 2008 Summer Games in Beijing and other Chinese cities. What has happened, at least so far, and we're talking Eastern Daylight Time here, my vantage point, is that the actual epicenter of world confrontation has moved dramatically to the southern borders of the former Soviet space and indeed the southern borders of the Russian Federation. We have in Georgia a certain regime of NATO adventurers, puppets, and provocateurs. They are the fruits of a Brzezinski-style color revolution CIA people power coup, what in German is known as a Volksputsch, not just a putsch, but a Volksputsch, a people's putsch, of course, not the people at all, but the bankers. And we're talking the discredited regime of the desperate demagogue of Mikhail Saakashvili, the man who calls himself the president of Georgia, in reality a total NATO puppet. Now, you better thank your lucky stars today that NATO expansion has not yet extended to include this gang of gangsters, adventurers, and criminals in Georgia, because if it were, the United States would be close to war. Over what? Over the border of Georgia? Of some place called Ossetia? No, I'm sorry. We are not going to have NATO expansion. Brzezinski is going to have to bite his tongue on this one. So what has happened today, obviously? We're talking about an area called South Ossetia, or South Ossetia, if you like, O-S-S-E-T-I-A. And this is, theoretically, a part of the old Georgian SSR, the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic. Now, those lines were drawn on the map primarily by Stalin, and they were done in a very arbitrary way, since it was, of course, Stalin. And it was done to keep certain subject nationalities of the old Soviet Union in line. He made Ukraine a bit bigger than it would have been because he wanted to gratify the Ukrainians by giving them some kind of a concession. These entities, of course, have no metaphysical existence. They're like American states. They are simply ways of organizing the territory. They are traditional, if you like, but it is the national state that is primary and not the administrative subdivisions thereof, which are subject to change. Look at West Virginia. There's an example of a change. So from my West Virginia point of view, I'm looking at South Ossetia. It's a very good example, actually. The Georgian bandit regime pulled away from the Soviet Union. At that time, it was the old communist nomenklatura. And then, several years back, the so-called Roses Revolution in Tbilisi, but good old American Tiflis, this is where Stalin comes from. In Tiflis, we had the coming of Mikhail Saakashvili, who is a Western-trained agent, puppet, and generally a criminal energy type. And the whole purpose of this was, these are the typical operations, as I've been telling you for the last several months, of the Brzezinski clique. Bandits and adventurers like Yushchenko in Ukraine. We have Tymoshenko, the gas princess or ice princess, that kleptocrat who's part of the ruling clique in Kiev. Well, in Tiflis, you have another ruling clique, and here we have Saakashvili. Now, the good people of South Ossetia, the capital here being Chinvali, they didn't want to go along with these Georgian kleptocrats. They wanted the security of being part of the Russian Federation. So they have formally seceded. And there have been Russian troops helping them along. It's like the Union troops that came into West Virginia at the time when West Virginia decided that they did not want to secede with Virginia. They wanted to stay as part of the Union. They did not want to make common cause with the slavocrats of the Virginia Tidewater because they were fiercely independent mountain men up there and didn't want any part of it. Something similar, if you like, in South Ossetia. South Ossetia wants to go with Russia, and the Russians have provided, therefore, what is known as a peacekeeping force. The design there is to deter the bandits and adventurers of Georgia from coming across the border in search of aggression and trying to reassert their bankrupt regime on the territory of South Ossetia. Now, it's clear that what obviously has been happening is that the behavior of the Georgian regime over the past several weeks and months has become more and more provocative. I have referred in these broadcasts already to the danger of a war between Russia and Georgia. Now, it looks like in honor of 8-8, we had been looking primarily at the Olympics, and God knows we still are. We'll get to that in just a second. But what has now happened is some series of provocations coming out of the Georgian military, the Georgian intelligence agencies, or maybe just the good old Georgian mafia, since that's what's ruling the country. The organized crime, gangster, and racketeer circles of Georgia have decided to launch provocations against these Russian peacekeepers who are helping. They're at the invitation of the South Ossetian people. The South Ossetians want to be part of Russia, and the status quo was tense, but it was working fine. This has been going on since 1992, 1993, 1994. So now we've got provocations coming from the Georgians, and eventually it reaches a point where the Russians refuse to put up with it. And they have now moved to crush the Georgian provocateurs, invaders, and subversives that have been infesting the area of South Ossetia. So we've got a tank column and also some bombings going on by the Russians. Now, the preliminary reports are not so clear. The air bases that have been bombed, Georgian air bases have been apparently taken under attack. That's what you'd want to do in an operation like this. Whether those are deep inside Georgia or whether they're close to the border or whether they're even in South Ossetia, I don't believe there are any operative Georgian air bases in South Ossetia at this point. But you can see a fairly robust tank column, perhaps, coming into one of these places. Whether this is accurate, it's very hard to tell because now you're in the area of extreme propaganda warfare. But the attention focuses on this place called Shinvali, South Ossetia. It's the capital of the South Ossetian enclave. Thank your lucky stars that we haven't had NATO expansion, or the United States might be at war in the service of this gang of adventurers steered by Zbigniew Brzezinski and his clique. Tarpley speaking from Washington, D.C. We're following the fast unfolding crisis provoked by NATO, provoked by the Brzezinski clique, which is now increasingly in power here in Washington, D.C., as we've been showing over the past several weeks. Let's get the Russian take on the provocations by the bandit regime of Georgia attempting to goad the Russians into a military action, which has now occurred. The headline here, RIA Novosti, Russian troops are approaching the South Ossetian capital. 10 Russian peacekeepers killed so far. Russian troops are approaching the capital of breakaway South Ossetia to help peacekeepers, Russian peacekeepers, amid a spiraling conflict with Georgia. Georgia had tried to regain control of the region Friday, a top Russian military spokesman said. Colonel Igor Konashenkov, an aide to the Russian ground forces commander, said that 10 Russian peacekeepers had been killed and 30 wounded in the province since Russia launched a major offensive overnight using tanks, combat aircraft, heavy artillery, and infantry. This is the calling card of Brzezinski once again. This is the hand of Brzezinski stirring up war with the biggest nuclear power in the world, bar none, with the most ICBMs, the biggest, dirtiest H-bombs, threatening you and your family and your future, worse than the neocons would ever dream of. This is beyond the imagination of a neocon, since, of course, Israel is not involved in any way here. Konashenkov, the Russian colonel, Polkovnik Konashenkov says, units of the 58th Army have been sent off to help Russian peacekeepers, and they are about to take Chinvali. The Georgian tanks are firing at Russian peacekeeping headquarters. Georgian troops are shooting Russian peacekeepers and civilians at observation posts they have seized. Vicious fighting is going on in the area of Chinvali, where Georgian tanks are firing at the peacekeepers' headquarters and base from close by. Earlier reports confirmed by the Russian Defense Ministry said that a convoy of Russian tanks and armored vehicles had entered Chinvali. Eyewitnesses said some 100 Russian tanks and armored vehicles then crossed the Russian border. So it's clear the Georgians are the aggressors. Emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council to label Georgia as an aggressor, to demand the withdrawal of all bandit Georgian forces and NATO agents from the territory of South Ossetia, and quick measures to allow the completion of the secession of South Ossetia and their joining of the Russian Federation, since that's obviously what they want. And now that Brzezinski has sponsored Kosovo independence, there is no formal legal principle anymore why South Ossetia can't have what they want. If Kosovo gets what they want, why is South Ossetia being forced under the bankrupt rule of the NATO kleptocrat Saakashvili? Give Saakashvili the sack. The Georgia Interior Ministry said that Russian aircraft dropped two bombs near the Vaziani military airbase in a suburb of Tiflis or Tbilisi, reporting no injuries. There was no immediate confirmation from Russia that bombers had gone into the area. Georgia's pro-Western president, well, Georgia's NATO puppet president, Mikhail Saakashvili, said in a television interview with CNN on Friday that Russia was fighting a war with his country. The foreign minister of Georgia called on the international community to make it clear to Russia that invading a sovereign country's territory is unacceptable in the 21st century. Yeah, except in hot pursuit of provocateurs and terrorists under the Bush doctrine. Too late for that argument. It's all changed. And now all the weapons forged by the neocons against Iraq and Iran will be turned against the NATO puppets in this area. You'll watch it. It's too bad, but there it goes. Senior Russian lawmakers and officials earlier urged a military operation to end the violence as Russian-led peacekeeping contingent was insufficient to ensure peace in the region. Well, now it's been reinforced, and I'm sure it'll be more than enough. Russia's president, Medvedev, and premier, Putin, vowed retaliation for what they called the Georgian aggression and punishment for those who kill Russian nationals in South Ossetia. This is an unprovoked attack by Georgia. Georgia are the aggressors. No U.S. support for Georgia. Not one penny, not one man. Interestingly, the Georgian bandit regime says they want their 1,000 people back from Iraq. Great, let them go. No U.S. plane, no U.S. ship must be used to help the Georgian war effort against Russia. We do not want to be a co-belligerent against Russia. American national interest imperatively demands good relations with Russia, no new Cold War, no provocations, no support for provocations, no force, no threat of force, good relations with Russia, our oldest ally from the League of the Armed Neutrality under Catherine the Great that helped the American Revolution, to the Russian fleets in New York and San Francisco during the Civil War that helped to prevent the British from attacking Abraham Lincoln and the Union. Till 9/11, you can say, right, you know, Putin's restraint on 9/11 was another important factor for world peace. We need good relations with Russia. One Cold War was enough. No to the Brzezinski clique and their attempt to compromise and mortgage your future with the subprime mortgage of NATO membership for bandit regimes like Saakashvili. Separatist officials say that the South Ossetian capital of Tsingtali has suffered major destruction, 15 civilian deaths. Georgia says three of their soldiers have been killed and 17 wounded by separatists. Now, those would be freedom fighters in our book. Those would be South Ossetians who want to maintain their allegiance to the Russian Federation. NATO, the European Union, and the United States, a key ally of Georgia, according to this dispatch, all issued statements urging Georgia and South Ossetia to bring an end to the conflict. Now, this is interesting because that implicitly admits that Georgia is the aggressor. And if Georgia had not started this surprise attack in the dead of night, that nothing would have happened. No Western reaction to the advance of Russian troops so far, and there better not be any, because then, as certain German officers can tell you, no eye will remain dry. President Saakashvili is seeking NATO membership for Georgia. He has pledged to bring South Ossetia with 80,000 people, along with the other breakaway province, Abkhazia, back under the central control of his regime. He has accused Russia of trying to annex the regions. Well, that's after Kosovo, that's going to be a matter for national self-determination, boys. Russia has maintained its peacekeeping contingent in Georgia's breakaway republics, South Ossetia and Abkhazia, since the post-Soviet conflicts of 1991, 1992, 1993. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has ordered humanitarian aid to be provided for the conflict zone. So, hands off Russia, hands off the South Ossetians. No U.S. aid, not one penny, not one soldier for the bandit regime in Georgia. We'll be back in a minute. Provocations, the Georgian aggression, the regime of President Saakashvili, a NATO puppet in Tiflis, Georgia, causing big trouble. And this is a big deal, needless to say, on the world stage. But we know who the aggressors were, and we are not going to buy into any of the anti-Russian propaganda that is now going to come spewing out of the controlled corporate media. And above all, from Mika Brzezinski. I'm sorry I missed her this morning on Morning Joe. She was probably wearing her, well, we won't get into it, but the symbols of past attacks on Russia might have been in order for her. Let me just look back now. How do we know this is the Brzezinski method? Let's consult Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate. Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, available at Amazon.com and doing remarkably well as the only critical study of Obama conducted from his left, not from the bankrupt neocon or right-wing position, but from a sophisticated New Deal moderate leftist position, which allows you to see Obama as he really is. Right? You don't have to force Obama into the matrix of a communist, which I don't think makes any sense. He's, after all, the candidate of Rockefeller, Soros, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Hardly a communist in the sense that most people would understand. And I don't believe a Muslim either. If he were, that would be his own business. The only thing is, we want to know if he's got a religion. We have a right to know what it is. But fine. None of that really gets you too far. What does make sense is to see him as an agent of finance capital. Now, in Obama the Postmodern Coup, I have a significant essay. It's 40 or 50 pages. The catastrophic trilateral presidency of the puppet Jimmy Carter, run on the economic side by Paul Adolf Volcker, trilateral commissioner, Rockefeller man from the Treasury, and, of course, head of the Federal Reserve, 22% prime rate, which means for most of us, 27, 28, 29, 30%, especially on interest on your credit card. That was one side. The other side, of course, the foreign policy run by Zbigniew Brzezinski. There's also some other domestic run by Stu Eisenstadt, who has now joined the Obama campaign. The Obama campaign is in every way a class reunion of the bankrupt failures of the Carter years, the Rockefellers, the Brzezinskis, the Volkers, the Eisenstats, and so forth. The ones that are still around are all there. However, at the end of this review of the Carter presidency, I abstract an interesting section called The Brzezinski Playbook, Hints of the Future under Obama. So I say, the brief retrospective of the 1977-1981 Brzezinski-Carter administration can provide us with a repertoire of tricks and tactics which the Brzezinski faction has used and which we may therefore expect to be carried out during a possible Obama administration. Let's call it the Brzezinski playbook. And here's the one that applies to the current situation. Because remember, what's ruling in Washington is not Bush, Cheney, and the neocons. They're gone, finished, kaput, out, worse than lame duck. Zero authority, virtually no influence on what goes on. They're just there to sign the papers and maintain the fiction of legality. What's ruling is the Principals Committee, Gates, Rice, Paulson, Mullen, and a few others. And naturally, the policies that those characters are executing come in the foreign policy area preponderantly from the Brzezinski faction of the Democratic Party. And we've seen that on North Korea. We've seen that on the question of the purge of the Air Force with James Rodney Schlesinger, another Carter veteran, trilateral Rockefeller man being brought in to purge the Air Force right now. And we've seen it also on the warnings to the Israelis. Do not attack Iran. You are not attacking Iran. The U.S. and the British don't want such an attack. I don't believe the Israelis will do it. That is mostly eyewash at this point. There is, however, an attack going on against Pakistan, which goes on in the background. However, now, what's the precedent for a small country near the southern border of the Soviet sphere then and the Russian sphere today being used to provoke a Russian military intervention, or Soviet in those days, and heat up the world situation and begin to weaken the Soviet Union or Russia? Oh, Afghanistan. Oh, gosh. And there's an area where Brzezinski has told the Nouvel Observateur in the most cynical and open way. The quotes are all available in Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, that he was the one who sent U.S. CIA Special Forces subversion teams into Afghanistan in the summer of 1979, 6 months or so before the Soviet invasion, to begin acting against Soviet interests with the goal of provoking the Red Army to come in, the Brezhnev regime, and the Russia, they fell for the bait. Now, this time I think the Russians know better what they're doing. Let me just give you the relevant passage. This is point four of my Brzezinski playbook, and again, it's in Obama, the Postmodern Coup. Playing one country against another in an attempt to destroy both is one of Brzezinski's favorite ploys. He boasts that he played the USSR against Afghanistan and destroyed the Soviet regime in the process. He also played Saddam Hussein's Iraq against Iran to weaken both countries and also to consolidate the Khomeini fundamentalist dictatorship in Iran, which would probably have fallen of its own weight of failures without the extra cohesion provided by a foreign aggressor. The playing of Ethiopia against Somalia in late 2006, early 2007, and the playing of Colombia against Venezuela in the spring of 2008 are typical examples of Brzezinski's handiwork. Look for him to attempt to play Syria and Iran against Russia. His larger goals include playing Europe and China against Russia in a huge pincers operation. This ploy is likely to blow up in his face. The last World War, of course, grew out of the British attempt to play Hitler against Stalin, an equally crackpot scheme. Well, maybe we can get back to that question now, because this playing of Hitler against Stalin, I return to that for the writing of the preface to my German edition of Obama, the Postmodern Coup. It's going to be something like Obama's Postmoderne Volksputsch, Obama's Volksputsch. That's the German one, but I went back and especially for the German reader, very important to understand that that's how the Second World War started. Let's not please start the third one this way. So there you have it. Now, therefore, the immediate parallel, what Brzezinski has in mind, is that it's going to be another edition of the Afghan War, that the Soviets went into Afghanistan and found ruin, and he's going to hope that the Russians will go into Georgia, mountainous area, and, of course, hard to occupy. He hopes that the Russians will find ruin there. I really doubt it. I think they understand far too well what they're dealing with, and I hope they've got the benefit of my Brzezinski playbook, so that they simply will not do this. So, again, the conclusions we have to draw from this, no NATO membership for Georgia. We are not tying our destiny to this gang of thugs. Not one man, woman, not one trooper, penny, plane, or anything. No transportation. If the Georgians want to get home from Iraq, let them walk. We have no part in it. We will not join in delivering troops for anti-Russian activities. They can get home the best way they can. Not our kettle of fish. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Here in Washington, D.C. Now, the other crisis area, and again, here again, we see the hand of the now dominant Brzezinski faction, this is the group that's now running Washington, D.C., while Bush and Cheney are increasingly irrelevant, right, relegated to child's play, as we saw in recent articles in the Huffington Post and elsewhere. The question now is the opening of the Beijing Olympics, the big ceremony taking place today. Now, this is, of course, Friday, 8-8-08. That's today when I'm recording this. So by the time you hear this, some of this news will have been surpassed by events. But let's recall, about 10 days ago, I posted rents.com and other places. Now it's available fairly widely on the Internet. It's up at actindependent.org. Put up an essay calling attention, thanks to my friend Gillian Norman of Australia, Queensland over there, having observed the events around this and also some Australian press accounts. We know that there's a group called the Turkestan Islamic Party, under a phantomatic commander, Saifullah. These are, of course, Anglo-American patsies. This is a false flag group. This is synthetic terrorism in the making. This guy is, you know, the next bin Laden. But he's a bin Laden who's different. He's bin Laden with a difference. He's bin Laden who doesn't attack the U.S. He attacks the enemies of the U.S. The neocon method is you attack yourself, and then you get the basis to beat your breast and go around attacking some minor enemies. The Brzezinski method is different. The Brzezinski method and the Brzezinski faction method is you get something going against your enemies under false flag. So those are the changes that are now going on. The Turkestan Islamic Party, TIP, Turkestan Islamic Party under Commander Saifullah has claimed that they've attacked in Shanghai, in Canton, in Wenzhou on the coast opposite Taiwan, and in Kunming in southeast China. Sorry, southwest China. So later in the past week, we had an attack in Xinjiang province, in this area of northwest China. Xinjiang, Xinjiang, S-I-N-K-I-A-N-G, S-I-N-J-I-A-N-G, X-I-N-K-I-A-N-G, or G-I-A-N-G. Anyway, Xinjiang, Xinjiang or Xinjiang province, that arid semi-desert and desert area, the site of the Chinese nuclear tests over the years. The capital there, Urumqi, with a Q at the end, Q-I at the end, makes a Qi. So Urumqi, looks Urumqi, Urumqi, but Urumqi is the name. Anyway, 16 Chinese police blown up, killed. 16 cops killed. Imagine 16 cops killed anywhere in the United States. 16 cops killed anywhere in Europe. Japan would be a huge story. But in this case, it's China. This is radically de-emphasized. So the controlled Anglo-American corporate media, the CNNs of the world, are not interested in 16 Chinese police being killed by what is obviously, to put it mildly, a terrorist group. I wonder what the difference is. Could it be that this group is viewed by the Anglo-Americans as a tool, as something that's doing their work? Well, that's an interesting one. Let's look at a very useful article. I'm very pleased that Professor Michel Chosudovsky of Canada has joined in the mobilization. This is an article, August 3rd, 2008. PSYOP, is Washington intent on sabotaging the Beijing Olympics? Pre-Olympic PSYOPs creates atmosphere of fear and insecurity. So he goes through the basics on Commander Saifullah and the Turkestan Islamic Party. Here's the lowdown. Who is behind the Turkestan Islamic Party? First of all, the first level of the sense certainty, we might say. According to Stratfor, the U.S.-based think tank on intelligence issues, the Turkestan Islamic Party, TIP, which claimed responsibility for the pre-Olympic terror attacks, the four plus now the fifth, belongs to the broader East Turkestan Islamic Movement, ETIM, based in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. And again, Chinese Turkestan, Xinjiang, the Uyghurs, the Hui are the ethnic group involved. The Turks is all they are. Turks, Muslims, but living under Chinese rule. The ETIM, the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, is known to be covertly supported by the Pakistan Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI. But of course, as we all know, the Pakistan Inter-Service Intelligence, the ISI, is a tool of the CIA. So what Chosudovsky writes is the ISI acting in close coordination with the CIA. The role of Pakistan's ISI in supporting the Islamist Uyghur insurgencies goes back to the mid-1990s, about the time Brzezinski was writing The Grand Chessboard. According to Yosef Bodansky, in a 2000 article in Defense and Foreign Affairs Strategic Policy, Bodansky writes, quote, the Pakistani terrorism sponsoring activities along the Silk Road, which is this, you know, this is this thing, it's written up in Herodotus, goes back to the, you know, the dawn of historical writing, 400, 500 BC. Herodotus is aware of a road that goes off into China, and it's used for the silk caravans, the camels. Along the Silk Road, the Pakistani terrorism-sponsoring activities along the Silk Road were the primary instrument of Islamabad's regional strategy. The ISI-sponsored insurgency and terrorism along the western gateways to the People's Republic of China. And these were strategic developments with grave ramifications. Close that quote from Bodansky. The historical relationship between Pakistan's military intelligence, ISI, and the CIA, of course, is notorious. It's amply documented, says Chostudovsky. In the course of the 1980s, the covert action division of the ISI was used by the CIA to recruit and train the Mujahideen who were sent to Afghanistan to fight Soviet troops. In the post-Cold War era, the CIA-ISI relationship remained largely intact. The ISI continued to be used by Washington to channel covert support to various Islamic fundamentalist movements, including al-Qaeda, involved in the false flag attacks. So there we get it. In China, covert support for the Uyghur insurgency largely serves the purposes of creating political instability. In the Xinjiang Uyghur area, the ISI, acting in liaison with the CIA, supports several Islamic organizations, including the Islamic Reformist Party, the East Turkestan National Unity Alliance, the Uyghur Liberation Organization, and the Central Asian Uyghur Jihad Party. Several of these Islamic organizations have received support and training from al-Qaeda, which is a U.S.-sponsored intelligence asset. Bravo, Chostudovsky. The declared objective of these Chinese-based Islamic organizations is the establishment of an Islamic caliphate in the region. And I would just add, remember that Zawahiri, it turns out that Zawahiri is alive and well and living in a cave. Zawahiri, the notorious British agent, MI6 agent, who actually runs al-Qaeda, has been including this Turkestan question, Chinese Turkestan question, in his litany, his cahier de doléances, right, his list of complaints, or gravamina, things he's unhappy about. Basically, Muslim population subjected to non-Muslim governments is the big thing for Zawa these days. He's been including them in the list. So that's been sheep-dipped. Now the neocon or anybody, you know, a Brzezinskiite can come on the TV and say, aha, these people are part of al-Qaeda, therefore we've got to go after them. But of course, we're not going after them because they're helping against China. So keep your eyes open. Anything calling itself Turkestan Islamic Party or any of those other names is a tool of U.S. intelligence, Anglo-American intelligence, provocateur. So the world is heating up big time. Second hour, World Crisis Radio comes to you from Washington, D.C. I'm Webster Tarpley speaking from there. As usual, we're calling your attention to Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate. Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, available from Amazon.com and other fine bookshops. If you can order it, I think you can. And imminent is now Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. The most postmodern coup, as some people have pointed out, is more about Brzezinski than it is about the puppet Obama. It's about equal, but it's also about Carter and the Carter years as a playbook. And I think it's a good thing to know, the appeal to history. Those who do not understand history are going to repeat it. And boy, that Carter administration, you don't want to repeat it. and especially you don't want to repeat it in exacerbated, accentuated form. So if you're interested in Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, shoot an email to info@progressivepress.com, info, I-N-F-O, as in information, info@progressivepress.com. Now, let's switch for a minute to domestic. We've been doing the provocations of the Georgian bandit regime of NATO puppets and kleptocrats under the color revolution putschist Saakashvili, a creature of Madison Avenue and K Street. And we've also discussed the question of this synthetic false flag terrorism now being directly mounted against China by the Anglo-American intelligence under the domination of the Brzezinski faction. Now let's turn to domestic financial. There is a flight to safety today. This is actually interesting. Another side benefit of the Georgian provocations against Russia is that there is a flight to dollars for the first time in quite a while. The euro has lost about 3 cents today, and that, of course, translates into a lower price of oil and an uptick in Wall Street based on an inflow of funds into New York. You can see that the funds were flowing out of New York up to this point. So if you can have one provocation a week, that's going to be good. Remember, though, if the price of oil goes down, the dollar gets into trouble because every reduction in the price of oil means that each barrel sold is soaking up fewer of those dollars that are sloshing around the world. Now, we have got a convention, a conference. It's a delegate conference, a private delegate conference of the Puma Democrats here in the Washington area this weekend. And I'll give you a report on the results of that next week. It's not the kind of thing you can just walk into. It's delegates from various groupings. Tune in next week and you'll hear all about that. But now let's look ahead to that, that Democratic convention and the situation with, Obama. First of all, Obama acting and looking more and more like a loser. Obama, the adulation addict, as soon as he runs into something that is other than adulation, he becomes testy. He is wearing thin. He's exhausted. It doesn't take much to exhaust him. He's lazy. Remember, if you look in Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, you will find a psychological profile of the Luo ethnic group to which he says he belongs. He says in his book, I'm a Luo. I'm a Luo. All right, you're a Luo. What's the profile of the Luos? The Luos are clever, superficial, lazy, exhibitionists, showboaters. There's your profile. Clever? Yeah, clever. Superficial? Extremely. Lazy? Showboaters. Clever, superficial, lazy, showboater, exhibitionists. The Luos. Typical Luo person, Obama. All right, so if he doesn't get adulation, he gets angry. He gets testy, and the rage begins to come up, right? He's learned to hide the rage. Michelle never learned to hide the rage, but Barkey did. An interview between Obama and a TV commentator in Las Vegas, right, on these flip-flops, right? He's flip-flopped on all the issues. How can you believe anything he says? And in the middle of this, Obama says, I thought I was talking to a broadcaster in Las Vegas and not to the McCain campaign. Are you the McCain campaign? So he's very, very angry because he's not getting his adulation. He's a megalomaniac. And if the megalomaniac doesn't get what he wants, then he's going to be angry about it. And the guy from Las Vegas says, look, you know, you just flipped on drilling, apart from the merits. He says, you know, you were against drilling, now you say you'll accept it. And the guy from Las Vegas says, you know, you say you're against this Yucca Mountain nuclear deposit facility. What if you flip on that, too? And you say, oh, I thought about it again, and now it's different. So at this point, Obama's really bristling. He's really testy and bristling and enraged. So there's one. The other one is Obama getting snippy on his airplane. Obama asked by the adoring, fawning coterie of media sycophants, well, is there going to be a roll call vote at the convention? And Obama says, that'll be taken care of by my staff meeting with the Clinton staff. Our people will take care of it, right? My people will see her people. And they ask him again, is there going to be a roll call vote at the convention? Did you say that you'd accept it? No, I didn't say I'd accept it. I said our staffs were working on it. So he's obviously very much afraid of a roll call vote at the Democratic National Convention, because that is, if nothing more, is going to highlight how weak he is, even in his own party. He won by the skin of his teeth. Thanks to the help of Ho-Ho, Howard Dean, Donna Brazile, Pelosi, the bankrupt and degenerate Kennedy clan, Tom Daschle, and God knows what other reprobates in the Democratic Party. So he's very, very much afraid of this. Now, I would just say parenthetically, in case any operatives are listening in, I would recommend this to the third-party campaigns, too. If you push Obama at this point, you can push him into a rage, and he will begin to chew the carpet. In other words, you can see in these testy, irritable, bristling episodes that we've had, two or three of them now, in the past week, Obama is on the verge of something ugly. Chewing the carpet, in other words. So think about this. And if you get a chance to ask him some questions, obviously he any probing question is going to be viewed by him as hostile and probably racist. So if you ask him any probing questions, he's going to call you a racist right away. And then that will essentially reveal his entire game. The other thing about the exhaustion part, the 7-year-old girl asks him why run for president. And Obama says the United States is not what it should be and what it used to be. Now, again, this can be interpreted in a number of ways. I think that the thing that is most important about it is not a clever answer, and the commentators who say that he is exhausted are correct. Now, Obama is now going to disappear from the scene for about a week, going to Hawaii. Here, however, we have this interesting person, Toot. We have his white grandmother, the woman who raised him, his actual mother. This is Toot. This is Mrs. Dunham out there in Hawaii, who's still alive, who has been kept sequestered. She's basically been kept sequestered by the Obama campaign, incommunicado. Now, with Barkey going there and some press undoubtedly trying to follow him, will questions finally be asked to the grandmother, Toot, Mrs. Dunham? Was your daughter, was she a communist for the Ford Foundation? That would be the question to ask. Communist, but for the Ford Foundation, that kind of communist. So those are interesting questions. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Georgian kleptocrat regime attacking Russian troops in South Ossetia, peacekeepers stationed there, attacked by Georgian aggressors and bandits. No NATO membership for that gang of thugs, not under any circumstances, and false flag terrorists of the Anglo-American stripe run through Pakistan, threatening the Beijing Olympic Games. we're back to 1977 to 1981, a different kind of strategic approach, and it's time to realize it. Bush, Cheney, neocons out, Rockefeller, trilateral, Brzezinski faction in. They are running the show, their methods, and you want to know their methods, only one way to get it all in one dose, Obama the postmodern coup, Obama the postmodern coup at Amazon.com by yours truly, Webster Tarpley. Now, Barkey is bristling. Barkey is irritable. Barkey will now go to Hawaii. Let's look at the Democratic Convention now, because this is getting more interesting than it has been. Asked this week by Jeff Rentz, what is Mrs. Clinton doing? I said, I hope she's scheming. I sure hope she is. Somebody's got to fight this guy, and anybody fighting, anybody coming into the lists against Obama is welcome and gets my immediate sympathetic attention. Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, Bob Barr, anybody. Anybody who's willing to attack Obama is doing an important patriotic service. And you could say McCain has been doing a bit better since he got into the ad hominem stuff. Ad hominem is the only way to go. You try to get Obama on the issues, he'll fake you out every time because he moves, you know, from one issue to another, you know, several times a day. He's like a revolving door. He's like a carousel of issue positions. Forget that. You've got to nail him on who he is, what he is, and above all, the personality cult with the fascistoid overtones. Democratic Convention meeting in Denver on the it starts on a Monday. And I guess that the Monday is the keynote, I guess. And then on Tuesday, we've got the speeches putting names in nomination. That's the big question. Hillary Clinton, and I think others, Edwards, Dodd, Biden. Biden can't resist. These people ought to be, you know, they ought to get their due, right? Kucinich would say some interesting things, I'm sure. And Gravel, for that matter. Why not let them be placed in nomination? Let all of them, all the generally recognized candidates, really ought to get their chance to have somebody nominate them and second them and have a floor demonstration. This is America. There's supposed to be a floor demonstration for these people. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday night is the night of the roll call of the states. At least it better be. According to the American tradition, there's a roll call of the states. You get to vote. It's not done on the basis of totalitarian liberalism where Nancy Pelosi does it by acclamation. And then on Thursday night, we have the Nuremberg rally with Obama addressing the stadium. If he gets that far, let's see if he does. There's often many a slip twixt the cup and the lip in terms of the political calculations that are made. Now, so far, there's going to be a major speech by Senator Clinton on Tuesday night. Senator Clinton dominates Tuesday night, and now Bill Clinton, President Clinton, the only Democrat to win two elections since 1944, 64 years, he obviously gets a speech, and that will dominate Wednesday night. And you'll remember how much better the Clintons are compared to Obama. And if that's your choice and that combination, there's no doubt at all the Clintons are much better than Obama, just to take it any further. Remember, Bill Clinton was better than Bush the elder, better than Dole, and better than Bush the younger. And more than that, we cannot say. Those are the facts. You can't argue with that. The question now is, what's going to happen at the convention? Let's try to look into the minds of the Clinton faction. They've been quiescent now, but now not so quiescent. We've got some things that indicate that there may be some fighting, and I sincerely hope so, because the fate of the country is involved. We have this interesting interview by a woman reporter with President Clinton asking, is Obama ready for the presidency? The answer is, nobody's ever really ready for the presidency. I learned a lot of things my first year on the job that I didn't know. Now, naturally, the line of the Hillary campaign, repeated by Bill many times, was, Senator Clinton is ready to govern from day one. Senator Clinton is ready to be president. Now he asked, is Obama ready to be president? Nobody's ever ready to be president. Need we say more? A subtle dig, a palpable hit, a very palpable hit. Hillary is asked, should there be a roll call of the states? This is a tape of her addressing a group of supporters in a kind of a front porch setting. And she says, I think the party is stronger if everybody gets to have their say and everybody gets to have their opinions represented. So there should be Hillary nominated, Hillary with a speech, seconding speeches, and a floor demonstration. Now, this is the moment where the convention could stampede. This is a moment where you might get an attempt to have Hillary nominated by acclamation, sweeping aside Obama. That's the kind of thing that can happen if you get a really vigorous floor demonstration going. So any Democratic delegates out there, you have got to begin planning that. Now, remember, Ho-Ho, the totalitarian Howard Dean, has been planning the seating arrangements of the Democratic convention in order to minimize the visibility of the pro-Clinton forces. I'm reminded of the 1968 Democratic convention in Chicago, which I attended. I was out in the streets at the corner of Michigan and Balbo with the slogan, dump the hump, that is, get rid of Hubert Humphrey and put up somebody else. In that convention, the Johnson-Daley combo in Chicago, it's amazing how these dailies are always on the wrong side of every critical moment from 1968 to 2008. We've got another corrupt daily who's one of the main backers of Barky Obama. But in those days, you had the New York delegation and the California delegation that were hotbeds of anti-Vietnam War sentiment. So what Johnson and company did, and his gang of hacks, was to put the California delegation and the New York delegation as far away as possible in the shadowy corners of that Chicago Coliseum, I guess it was called, there in the Stockyards area, what used to be the Stockyards, to try to minimize their presence. And the totalitarian Howard Dean, Ho-Ho, is trying to do the same thing. He's trying to stack the deck geographically. Delegates be warned. Delegates prepare your own plans to counter that. Back in a minute.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Radio. We're looking ahead to the Democratic convention. What you need, if you're a delegate, if you're an alternate, if you have some way of getting on the floor, is a strategy to counter the totalitarian lockstep imposed by Ho-Ho, Howard Dean, and by the bankrupt and discredited sectarian Donna Brazile, along with Axelrod, Plouf, and the rest of the Obamazoid clique on the Chicago bipartisan combine of corrupt grafters. You want to counter them. So the obvious thing is, if there's a roll call vote, it means that names have got to be placed in nomination. That means a nominating speech and a seconding speech. There's got to be a floor demo. And a floor demo is your chance to get the convention going in a determined direction. You might say stampede the convention, but the stampeding is being done by the other side. So get a counter stampede or a prise de conscience, a moment of reason involved, is what you need for the convention in that case. That might come in the middle of Bill Clinton's speech. What kind of speech will Bill Clinton give? Will he attempt to incite the crowd to do something? Well, he might. What has he got to lose? National interest demands it. It is time for somebody to step in and save the country. And what better achievement for a veteran like President Clinton than to be the one who does it. Remember, the world history uses individuals as tools, and when it's time to be used, you've got to step forward and do your part to move the historical process along. That's one of the basic features of Confucianism as well. It's a universal idea. So that's Wednesday, and then, of course, there's also the Thursday evening with a speech by Mrs. Clinton, and by that time, they might be ready to have a floor demonstration that could move the entire convention to turn away from Obama. And again, with Obama, the point is the polls are anemic. There's a chorus now of yelping, caterwauling media whores demanding to know, why isn't Obama doing better? Why is he not in the lead? Why can't he put McCain away? How come he hasn't pulled into double digits? How come it's not hopeless? Why hasn't McCain dropped out yet? Why have the election anyway? You know, the routine. The polls are moving against Obama. Obama, as I have argued from the beginning, is a weak, weak candidate. He has never won public office in a contested election. His only hope is a wave of scandals against McCain. Otherwise, the current tendencies and this, obviously, the elitist, oligarchical, what can we say, foundation-funded rhetoric coming from Obama is poison. It's toxic. These remarks to the 7-year-old girl show that he simply can't help himself, especially when he gets a little bit exhausted. So there's also the possibility that if the heavy-handed totalitarian measures of Chairman Hoho become so pervasive that we begin to think of Mayor Daley and his goons at the 1968 convention, Mayor Daley threatening speakers on the podium and screaming obscenities, right? Maybe we'll have Axelrod, who comes from that same machine, and Plouffe screaming obscenities in the way that Mayor Daley did. Maybe time to walk out of the convention. Maybe time to prepare an alternate setting to have the real Democratic Party meet and nominate somebody other than Obama. In other words, they walk out from the convention. If Ho-Ho succeeds in controlling the floor with totalitarian means, he may just be so abrasive and so strangling and so arrogant and such a screamer. If Ho-Ho starts to scream, that may be the signal for some kind of action on the floor or a walkout from the convention. So it's time to begin to plan all of that tactically. There's got to be competent leadership on the floor of the convention, ready to launch demonstrations, ready to walk out if necessary. Remember that demonstrations on the floor are generally blacked out by the controlled corporate media. Today, it may be a little bit better if the right-wing channels are there. They would perhaps cover it, whereas the three Wall Street networks probably would not. So there is perhaps more hope, and of course you've got to hope for some independent media with television cameras on the floor in case there are demonstrations against the Obama lockstep and against totalitarian control that are breaking out. Now the other thing is, we've got these Atlantic Monthly memos. Oh my heavens, this is obviously leaked by the Clinton campaign, and I think this is a sign of life. We have approximately 200 internal memos obtained by Josh Green of the Atlantic Monthly, and he's going to put 130 or more of these internal memos. We should see them all, Josh. We want to see every one of them. All of these memos scanned in, posted online early next week, depending on when you hear this. Again, today's Friday, 8/8/08. 130 memos on the Atlantic Monthly website written by Mark Penn, Harold DeKeys, Jeff Garin, and others inside the Clinton campaign organization. Now, some of this may be denigration of these Clintonians, but I'm sure some of it is going to be choice commentary on Obama. And that, I think, is going to lead to some increased friction, as these people are saying off the record what they really think about Obama. So that, again, I think a sign of life. Probably memos that would make Mark Penn look bad. He should look bad. Maybe Solis Doyle, whose brother Danny is a creature of the Daily Machine, a close associate of Axelrod, and who therefore is rightly suspect of having been some kind of a submarine inside the Clinton campaign the entire time. So all of this is now leading on towards the convention. And the input, of course, of the Pumas, absolutely critical. Yesterday we had Will Bauer on the Fox News channel with Neil Cavuto talking about the rejection front against Obama inside the Democratic Party, the Puma Democrats. You can keep up with this at Puma 08 and at Just Say No Deal. You've got a choice there of about 150 websites by now. This is a real power. This is a powerhouse of blogs capable of standing up to Obama's paid mercenary bloggers from the Gaza Strip and Bangalore and other third world markets who come on to praise Obama in broken English because these poor guys have been recruited and given coolie wages by Obama, who has farmed out jobs that would normally go to a phone bank in Iowa. He's put them in Bangalore, showing what his administration also would do. So one other important point. You want to know what Obama will do. Let's look at Pelosi for a second. Pelosi, you'll remember, and the Democrats in the Congress ran in November 2006 on the promise that they would end the Iraq war. This was the main thing. They also broadly hinted that they would begin impeachment against Bush. But let's focus on the Iraq war at the moment. Pelosi always says, I don't have the votes to stop the Iraq war. I don't have the votes. I don't have the votes. Yeah, the answer to that, as many have said, is bring no bill. You don't have to have the votes to pass a bill. You're the Speaker of the House. You make sure the bill never comes up. If Pelosi had been serious, which she never was, if she wanted to end the Iraq war, the way to do that would have been to bring no bill. The money runs out, the troops come home, at that point you pass another funding resolution which gives the money to bring the troops home. The war is over. If Pelosi had used the inherent powers as Speaker of the House to end the war in 2007 when she came into power, the war would have been over by the end of 2007. In Iran, China, 25 times as big, with ICBMs and H-bombs that the Iranians can only dream of. Now, McCain, obviously McCain is not a good bet, but in this desperate situation, the tired old lame duck McCain coming into office would be a transitional figure from the word go. He would be on his way out as soon as he got there. He'd be a one-termer. He would be faced by a ferociously hostile Democratic Congress. If they try to scare you with the Supreme Court, then you can say, oh, isn't it wonderful that we have you Democrats there to filibuster all those judges that McCain will put up, just the way they filibustered the rats cabal, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. So therefore, in this extreme situation, you got to look for the lesser evil. That's all you can do. And that would be to fight at the Democratic convention to stop Obama. Using any other candidate at this point would be a step forward. So we'll be back next week. We'll tell you about the results on the Puma side of things. And keep your eyes on Georgia and keep your eyes on Turkestan, Chinese Turkestan. Back next week.